It's a bad time for newspapers, as you all know. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline. Our circulation numbers are also down as we compete with a variety of media. Technology is driving distribution. And the internet...
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I am Charlie Bennett, on the board and terrified in the studio with Amit, Fred, Wendy, and a visitor from the past. Cody is here, too. Maybe we'll get him on a mic. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our show today is called Libraries at Scale.
Oh, Fred, this is when we take over, right? Libraries take over the world.
Yes. Yeah. Well.
Yes.
At scale, you know, and maybe not quite that big, not yet. There's still a few kinks to work out.
We talked with Roger Schoenfeld about models, trends, and shifts in the library collaboration landscape.
If you want to join the conversation, the hashtag for this show is Litz423 for Lost in the Stacks, episode 423, folks. Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or membership models with that hashtag.
And our songs today are about getting to know how collaborations work, how scale impacts management, and vehicles. As we'll learn today, there are many different vehicles for library collaboration. I see what you did there. So let's kick the show off with a classic song about riding in style. This is a vehicle by the Ides of March, right here on Lost in the Stacks.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and joining us by phone is Roger Schoenfeld, the director of the Ithaca SNR Library Scholarly Communications and Museums Program. Ithaca SNR provides research and strategic guidance to help the academic and cultural communities serve the public good and navigate economic, technological, and demographic change. In his role with Ithaca, Roger studies and consults on the changing roles of academic libraries, scholarly publishers, and learned societies. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Such a pleasure to join you today.
Roger, can you start by telling us a little bit about the path you took to become a researcher focused on academic and cultural communities?
Sure. Well, I've spent much of my career working in and around higher education, and I had the great privilege of working at the Andrew Mellon Foundation for about 5 years. At the beginning of my career, where I had a chance to really learn about some of the larger scale policy issues facing higher education institutions. And so things have sort of evolved, it feels naturally since then, when Ithaca was being founded, formed by the Mellon Foundation. I came over to Ithaca to start a small research program to support the work of thinking about the future of libraries and digitization and work like that. And over the course of time, we put that work into a structure that of Ithaca SNR that has an educational transformation program as well. And at the same time, we've built our work to face publishers and museums also, learned societies, publishers, and museums also. At the same time, what I've been doing myself is deepening my own engagement with academic libraries. And so about 4 or maybe 5 years ago, I went back to get an MLS myself and was really pleased to have the chance to do that sort of as a mid-career professional. And so that was a great experience as well to kind of deepen my connections with and engagement with the library community. So it's been I feel like at this point I'm certainly by no means the methodologist of the team, There's about 10 of us, and we have folks who are much more methodologically sophisticated in qualitative and ethnographic research, in survey methodologies, and so forth. And so it's been a real thrill to have a chance to hopefully build a team that that brings a combination of methodological and subject matter expertise to some of the difficult challenges and great opportunities that our sector faces today.
Did you have an interest in how research libraries and like academic libraries fit into that whole like research landscape? You know, as Ithaca was forming, as Mellon was forming Ithaca, as you said, and then that led you to the MLS, or did you come by it like a different route?
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. And I think I felt I came at this originally from a deep interest in libraries and how libraries were changing. As an undergraduate, I watched the old periodical reading room in my, college library have, some of the early print journals get removed from, the early experience of seeing some of the print journals get removed and the computers carted in, as it were. And, so I could see that there was real change and excitement and opportunity facing university libraries. But when I came to Mellon, actually, it was quite interesting because although Mellon, even at the time, was quite interested in libraries and digitization and scholarly communication, the work that I was doing was as much about higher education policy, things like college admissions and athletics and topics like that I also had a chance to work on there. And so I've always, as a result of that experience, I've subsequently really seen things not just from a library's perspective, but also to some extent, I think through the faculty perspective, the university perspective, and I like to think that that's often been an asset in the perspective that I can bring to bear.
In March of this year, you published a report titled "Restructuring Library Collaboration," and at one point in the report, you wrote, "Academic libraries typically serve individual higher education institutions, yet their objectives require that they achieve greater negotiating power, more efficient distribution of collections, and stronger systems and services than even the largest academic library can provide itself. As a result, academic libraries have sought for more than a century to generate cross-institutional scale." Can you tell us about some of the types of collaborations libraries have used to scale up?
Absolutely. It's been everything from incredibly informal networks. So if you think about, the history of interlibrary lending and how the kind of goodwill of individual librarians and the connections that they had with one another, helped some of the earliest interlibrary lending networks to develop, all the way through to for example, the licensing consortia that help many academic and research libraries today to license electronic journals and e-books and other kinds of published content, through to various kinds of systems. The central systems of statewide university systems. So whether it be the California Digital Library or the State University of New York Office of Library and Information Services or OhioLINK or various other kinds of systems that are really in some ways trying to provide a layer of services for their constituent libraries, through to some of the membership organizations, things like the Digital Preservation Network or OCLC or some of the not-for-profit initiatives, Lyrisis, My Own Employer, Ithaca. There are so many different styles and models of these collaborative vehicles, and it's a really rich landscape.
And I think we're going to get more into how the collaborative vehicles work and how the collaborative vehicles may sometimes face challenges in the next segment. We are speaking with Roger Schoenfeld, and we will be back with more about library collaboration after a music set.
File this set under Z675.U5P342.
I Want to Know by Golden Triangle. Before that, Institutions by Personal Column. Those were songs about getting to know our institutions and how they work, or sometimes they don't.
Today's Lost in the Stacks is all about libraries at scale, and we are talking to Roger Schoenfeld about models and trends in library collaboration. And as we were closing the last segment, Roger, we were talking about the collaborative vehicles, the consortia, various trust organizations. There's a lot of initiatives that libraries can enter into. I want to talk about one in particular, maybe where that collaboration vehicle, you know, slightly went off the road a little bit. The Digital Preservation Network, the DPEN. It was a preservation of unique academic library collections from different geographic and technical institutional environments. But within the last year, they sunsetted their operations. What happened there to send that collaboration vehicle, you know, kind of off? And, you know, what lessons can we learn from that?
The leadership of the collaboration at the time of the sunsetting process was unusually transparent in sharing some of its experience and some of the lessons that they felt could be learned by others in the community as a result of the sunsetting of the organization. I think we all know that in the library sector, we definitely have had other organizational failures, but all too often we've tried to kind of, I don't know if cover up is fair, but we certainly have not tried to publicize or publicly engage with the lessons that can be learned from those experiences in a number of other cases that I can think of anyway. And so I really want to, you know, I think it's important. One of the reasons why DPN is important here is that they've been so transparent. Now, you know, so in terms of what are some of the takeaways here, I think it's really important to recognize that preservation is an expensive undertaking. It has technical complexity, but also production complexity, whatever meaningful improvements have been made at technical and organizational levels over the years in digital preservation, there are meaningful gaps and costs involved. And so when DPEN was founded, it was really founded almost as much as a movement of, you know, university leaders and university librarians who recognized the importance of digital preservation and wanted to find ways to put more investment into it than it was a kind of clearly envisioned, closely specified product offering. And I think that, you know, it took years really for a rigorous product definition to emerge. And I think one of the real challenges that DPN faced was that it was a membership organization, but it was a membership organization without a clearly defined product for quite some time, and as a result that cost it some of the runway that it otherwise would have had to get its offerings off the ground. DPN was founded as a single purpose organization. It had one principal revenue flow, which was the annual membership fee. I believe it was $20,000 a year. You know, the reality is that what DPEN ended up providing was a preservation product for, you know, principally for university libraries' distinctive collections, digitized distinctive collections. And at the level of a product like that, you know, there is meaningful competition for that product offering. It turns out that, you know, many CIOs and other university leaders felt that this wasn't really a preservation need. There was a sense that it was maybe more just a storage need that could be met by, any cloud storage provider, and that the layer of preservation assurance that DPEN could offer wasn't, you know, a substantial enough value add to justify the cost. The reality is that, you know, as a kind of single purpose, single product organization, but one that was governed by a membership and therefore, had
difficulty, if not, you know, little interest in moving on beyond the definition of that first product, you know, towards what might have been some better match between the value that they could offer and the value that their customers would see, that their members would see, and the product that they would offer. And so I think the fact that there was a sort of single purpose, and that the single purpose, when it was productized, turned out not to have as much demand as one might have, economic demand as one might have hoped, and then was unable to redefine its product offering because of the strictures of a membership organization. You know, I think that's really kind of the intersection of those issues. It explains a lot of the challenge that they faced.
So you mentioned, you know, the movement and then the sort of product side. How do you think the trends in sort of sustainable collaboration in the digital preservation landscape differ from, say, scholarly publishing in terms of what's a movement, what's a product, what is going sort of to the corporate versus maybe the more open side?
Well, that's a great question, because, you know, if you think about the scholarly publishing analogy, what's a movement? Open access is a great example of a movement, right? And, you know, we're all, I'm sure, listeners are widely familiar with open access and some of the twists and turns that it's taken over the course of the years. But if you think about it, open access itself is not a product, right? Any more than, you know, it may be an imperative. There may be a movement around the imperative, but it's not a product. A product is, you know, gold APC driven open access, right? To take the analogy. And so I think, you know, I think similarly, when we think about digital preservation is an imperative without any question. The preservation of digital objects, an absolute imperative core value of our profession. I certainly believe, there was a movement through DPN that kind of coalesced around this. And I think that was really valuable. And it is unfortunate that movement, as such doesn't exist any longer. But the product has to be at the level of, you know, we're going to preserve this kind of content with that kind of revenue stream for this kind of, you know, level of assurance. And so, you know, that can look like all kinds of different things. It can look like HathiTrust. You know, it can look like my colleagues here at Ithaca who work on Portico. It can look like any number of these kinds of initiatives. It can look like the Center for Research Libraries. It can look like a university library itself and the resources that it devotes internally to digital preservation. But, you know, these are very different kinds of product offerings. And I think we have to recognize that each of them exists in a competitive marketplace, even if the organizations themselves that are providing them are not for profits, the marketplace in which they have to be able to operate is one where there is competition and often choice, and that's one of the you know realities that I think DPN faced as it moved beyond the movement towards the product offering.
You are listening to Lost in the Stacks, and we'll talk more with Roger Schoenfeld on the left side of the hour.
Hi, this is Mandy Sheff, the Loudmouth Librarian, and you're listening to Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta.
Today's Lost in the Stacks is called Libraries at Scale. In February 2019, the Digital Preservation Network, DPN, published its final report. This is the section called Lessons Learned. Realistic and adaptable financial modeling was needed. The model placed too much reliance on potential deposits and payments. Product time to market was slow at the same time that member service needs changed rapidly. Development with distributed team members proved difficult and costly. Central technical leadership would have been valuable early in the process. Boy, same here, buddy. Coupling storage with membership did not incentivize large deposits. More deepened involvement with services for members and a focus on member engagement was needed. A focus on member governance should have been sought from the beginning. Policies and service offerings were not agile and did not track quickly enough on changing needs. Increased transparency in all directions among all partners, including deepened central staff, the nodes, and DuraSpace, would have improved communication and trust as the network developed. And finally, selection and recruitment of a board that is the correct fit for the organization are essential. The board should be engaged in the mission and program of the organization. Lessons learned. Onward, library collaborators. File this set under PN 1995.9.H6 T495.
King Kong by Octopus Prime, and before that, Electrical Elephant by Fishboy. Those were songs about things that are difficult to manage at very different scales. We're talking about library collaboration on Lost in the Stacks, and our guest is Roger Schoenfeld of Ithaca SNR. We talked about one sort of case study of collaboration in the last segment. Another case study that's arisen recently, in late 2018, the Digital Public Library of America, or DPLA, which originally focused on providing aggregated access to special collections, took a pretty different pivot to focus on ebooks. How would you characterize DPLA as a collaborative entity, and what do you think was behind some of the decision to pivot there?
So I would like to acknowledge that I'm not certain that DPLA would itself agree with the characterization that it has chosen to pivot. But what actually has happened, in point of fact, was that DPLA has had two things happen in close succession. One is that they have downsized some of the staffing, some of the employees that were focused on the sort of special collections discovery and access work that they are probably most well known for. And at the same time, they have launched some substantial initiatives in the direction of ebooks, published ebooks. And so, so as an analyst of the sector, I put those two things together, and to me, that looks like a pivot. When I, look at DPLA, I think one of the most interesting things about it was that it was originally founded, its origin story is in resisting the commercial efforts to digitize books, especially through the Google Books Initiative. And I think it has had a bit of a hard time and some difficult, governance dynamics in building attempting to build an organization around what I believe is a good idea, which is to keep digitized books in the commons, right? So that's sort of led me to, ask questions about when is it that a good idea does require a new organization, and when is a good idea just a good idea, and that's enough. So I think DPLA has built some really fantastic tools. I certainly don't mean to detract from that good work at all. But whether it has a clear sense of purpose and a clearly articulated vision for itself, with both the work to focus on special collections and their discovery on the one hand, and sort of rethinking the distribution models for ebooks on the other, is not really clear to me.
So as we sort of look to other examples or look ahead to other good ideas or movements, you've wrote in your report that efforts to strike the right balance particularly in an environment of increasing integration, this is talking about like open source initiatives in particular, may require a new set of governance principles, business models, or a new approach to technical architecture. And I'm wondering, what are some of these sort of new approaches you think might be sustainable if someone has a good idea and a movement and wants to create a sustainable product?
That is a really, really important question. And the, you know, the area that you're pointing to there in the report is where I was reflecting on open source solutions in particular. And open source, to my mind, is a very important area for library collaboration today. We see increasing efforts to collaborate among and across libraries in the kinds of digital platforms and services and tools that they offer, whether it be an ILS or an LSP or an institutional repository or various other kinds of tools and services. And so what I feel is really important is that we recognize, as I've emphasized already in recent minutes, that open source solutions also compete in the marketplace. And, you know, just because one might prefer something that is open source, that's not enough of a justification for most other organizations to select the open source solution. Typically, the choice of a platform is made in a marketplace where price is not the only factor, and price, when it is a factor, has to be fully loaded, inclusive of all its costs, and not just the sticker price. And so what we see when we're looking at how to strike the right balance here is that, you know, a number of standalone applications. So the institutional repository is a great example here. Standalone applications like the institutional repository, as it might be offered in its open source instantiation through, let's say, some of the DuraSpace offerings, what we see are that other libraries and other users clearly are looking for repository solutions that fit into a workflow, a user workflow or an institutional workflow, whereby the deposit workflow, the compliance workflow, the discovery workflow matter perhaps even more so than the quality of the repository itself. And in that kind of a sort of fast-moving environment where the boundaries between the repository and some of the adjacent solutions have been shifting fairly steadily, I think we're seeing the need for real agility in strategy and product development. And unfortunately, open source, you know, is great for a number of things. It's great for inclusive governance, which we shouldn't omit to emphasize is such an important quality and characteristic, but open source is not always great for agility, and especially institutional open source solutions like the ones that have been typically among those in the academic library sphere are really often not good for product agility. So that's where I think some of these questions about, you know, how do different pieces of a workflow, a repository, a user interface, data set service, et cetera, how do these different pieces get integrated into a single architecture or a single user experience is a really pressing, to my mind, a really, really pressing question.
Well, we'll have to dig into that question as we go into the future. We've been speaking today with Roger Schoenfeld, director of the Ithaca SNR Libraries Scholarly Communication and Museums Program. Thank you so much for joining us, Roger.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
File this set under HE151.C88.
Space Plane by David McNeil. Before that was Drive My Car by The Nasty Facts, and before that was Planes and Boats and Trains by Burt Bacharach. Songs about trying to find the right vehicle to get you where you want to go.
All Our show today was called Libraries at Scale. We talked with Roger Schoenfeld about his take on recent developments in libraries' efforts to scale up.
We explored what happens when membership models and movements, products and good ideas intersect with markets and hard questions of sustainability.
On Austin the Stacks, we've had the luck to talk with folks from many of the organizations and efforts mentioned during today's show. We applaud them for their bravery in moments of success or failure.
That's right. Keep up the bold ideas, y'all. And with that, let's roll those credits.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Charlie Bennett, that's me, Amit Doshi, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko.
Charlie Bennett, that's you, was our engineer today.
I did the best I could.
And you did great. The show was brought to you in part by the digital age and its difficulties.
Legal counsel and product agility were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Roger for being on the show, and thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and all of those other aggregators just scrape our feed.
Gaff them. They got them all. Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we'll be talking about backing up planet Earth. That's a piece of cake, right?
Okay, one last quote from Roger's report on library collaborations. Quote, "Our profession, librarianship, has chosen to recognize and reward leaders for creating new organizations. There is, as a result, an incentive to create a new organization above and beyond the needs of libraries themselves." End quote. Well, folks, while our efforts to create collaboration vehicles may be with the best of intentions, it's perhaps inevitable that some of those vehicles hit the skids and flip. So let's close with Requiem for a Canceled Program by Vehicle Flips right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend, everybody, and drive safe.